Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to On Point and the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen, and over at Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good afternoon on this beautiful
Saturday.
Good
afternoon, my colleague, Mr. Don Allen, as we come through you from the studios here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. By the way, to our international and domestic listeners, if you will, we are preparing for war. If you will, name and the memory of Neville Chamberlain, the Prime Minister back in the mid-1930s, who said there will be no war in our time.
Yeah.
As he left Munich after being hoodwinked by, at that time, Premier Adolf Hitler. But anyways, yeah, ready to go, man. Forces are ready. C-30, C-5s, man. Naval ships in the Mediterranean, ready to go, man. Missiles are geared up. Here's the thing, Don, you better understand.
Yeah.
They better hope that the Chinese and the Russians don't give the Syrians the code breakers to the GPSs on those missiles, because if they do, a lot of American taxpayers' dollars are just going to go into the water in the side of a mountain and things like that. But anyways, what do we got, man?
I'd just like to add to that, the Russian President Vladimir Putin has challenged the U.S. to present the evidence that Syria attacked rebels with chemical weapons near Damascus, and so there's some positioning going on here with this.
Well, not only that, the Russians have positioned two of their warships are in the Mediterranean as we speak. They left Black Sea port Sevastopol a number of days ago, came through the Straits of Istanbul, and are now. That's a dangerous situation. You have two competing powers, and they have naval forces looking at each other, staring each other down. You don't know if an accident could take place, a wrong gesture, if you will. And I noticed that the American media is staying away from the fact that Russian warships are now in the Mediterranean, in the Eastern Mediterranean. It's not a good sign, Don. I can tell you that as a military historian.
Yes, not at all, not at all. Well, Mr. Edwards, we got to deal with the Minneapolis Public Schools 2013 MCA 2 and MCA 3. Summary results, or the test scores for our children in the Minneapolis public schools, which are a total disaster for 2013. And looking at the grades, the grade levels, and the math, and the science, and the reading, we've had dramatic drops for African American children and Native American children, and down into like the 21 percentile, which is, you know, you're basically saying the kids can't read or count when they're in fifth,
sixth,
seventh.
In fact, it's a 20% drop everywhere across the board, and that kind of makes sense and ties into the drop that was revealed on CNN last night about one of our charter schools here in the Twin Cities, 25% drop there. The average drop is 21.5% for African Americans, Native Americans, and also Hispanics. Hispanics taken. In fact, even a 5-6% drop for white students, which does not endear Superintendent Bernadette Johnson to the white population of school-aged children. In fact, in other societies, based on this disastrous downturn, Superintendent Johnson would have submitted her resignation as well as the board, but they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
She's certainly not going to do that with a $200,000 salary. But I'm surprised that organizations have not called for her resignation. This is a disaster, these test scores, which, by the way, were held back by request from the district to the State Department of Education to hold these numbers back.
Mm-hmm.
There is a federal law that says that your numbers must be revealed publicly before the beginning of the next school year. And so... And wasn't that a disaster, Don? I know you've been following that. They did not keep an eye on the temperature, the barometer, if you will, and had to close schools for Thursday and Friday, though they indicate that it was 27 of them, that other schools, like some of the more recently built schools, could still function. But I mean, children were in miserable conditions here in our Minneapolis public schools, and it was not healthy, if you will. Some of the children became ill from heat stress, and et cetera. And I just don't know what goes on over there at 1250. By the way, 1250 is the address of the district's beautiful new headquarters, built, by the way, Don, you know all about that, built without black labor.
Yes, or a community benefits agreement. Yeah, this was very shameful, you know, for our domestic and international listeners. In the Twin Cities, we had temperatures up near 100 degrees, and these some of these old school buildings, you know, they caught kids hanging out of windows, you know, trying to get a breath of air, and they just turned into ovens, literally. And so
it was terrible.
Yeah, the school finally decided to shut it down.
It was terrible. It was. What really got it was a picture at a high school called Patrick Henry, where front page above the fold, a young white high school student, probably maybe about 16, hanging out the window, gasping because of the stifling heat. That was the camel that broke the back. You know, big white corporate here said, hey, close those schools down. You know,
yes,
this is inhuman. Now, it was okay as long as they thought the little black children were the only ones that were suffering. But that picture, which is an award-winning picture, as we understand it from the AP, that's the Associated Press, for those that don't know, that picture is what really made a white corporate here in the Twin Cities say, hey, let's close these operations down. Oh, it's been one disaster after the other, Don. But go ahead. You wanted to get into the test scores to average instead of about 21.5.
Sure.
God bless you there, Don. You're
sure.
Kind of sneezing there into the microphone, but go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you know,
that's that air conditioning, buddy.
Yes.
But
yes,
what do you think it looks like?
Well, the percentage of students who met or exceeded the standards on the MCA 2010-2013, MCA 2 and 3 reading by ethnicity. Now, this is a shocker, because in 2010, let's go back to 2008 when they were, the Minneapolis Public Schools was fronting with that referendum. They needed more money for the 2010-2011 school year. And so they, you know, sold that to the community using a number of operatives here in town. And so people voted for that. And so these scores got out with 2010, which shows in 2010, the African-American student, I was at 33% with who met or exceeded the standards on the MCA 2 and 3. Now, 2011, they went up to 39%, and 2012, they went up a couple points to 41%. And now we have this disastrous drop in 2013 to 21%, and they're joined by the Native Americans with 22% and the Hispanics at 22%.
Don, why don't you also deal with, so that our listening audience across the world can understand, there's also a category right there under the lines that you're reading, is what the statewide proficiency was for the same group. Example, Native Americans, which were just a disaster at 20%, statewide were like at 58%, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at
that
down there, Don. Yep. Proficiency, statewide, that's what that bottom line means. Even African Americans were at like 56% with regards to statewide, which meant those suburban districts and et cetera, and yet there was a 30-some percent difference in the Minneapolis public schools. They're not teaching black children anything. I mean,
yeah.
I called attention to all of those that, you know, can access the report. I know there are many out there that can. And you need to take a look at that bottom line there that talks in terms of the state, what the state proficiency level of achievement is. It is horrifying, man, horrifying.
Yes, it is. But, you know, something else, Mr. Edwards, that's problematic about this is that if you're looking at some of the scores for the white students, they seem to be doing just fine, although they're, you know, in the 80 percentile, they're still, you know, up there. And they're sitting in the same classrooms with our African-American students and Hispanic students. So, I mean, what's really happening here in the Minneapolis public schools? And that's
selective instruction. We used to talk about it years ago when folks were able to talk about it and leadership wasn't terrified. It's called selective instruction, Don.
Hmm.
It's selective instruction, meaning methods of teaching, methodology, approaches to the methodology, and et cetera. Man, I don't know why people have a problem understanding that that children of color, particularly African Americans, are being selectively, quote unquote, genocide against. This is educational and material genocide. That's what this is.
Yes, yes. And just looking at the scores, you can find those scores in just going to the Minneapolis Public Schools website and typing in, searching test scores, or MCA 2 and 3. And those can pop up rather quickly for
now,
you to
Now, Don,
use.
You had to retain, you had to move to obtain that under the Freedom of Information Act, didn't you? The district,
yes,
how, you, what you've been, this program has been asking for those test scores for over a month and a half. So we
a month and a half.
Legal action, is that correct, Don?
Yes, I had sent in a request for information from the Minneapolis Public Schools, and of course, a month and a half ago, they said, "Well, we don't have it. We'll get back to you," and they don't call us back right away. And so I pestered them to the point where they decided that we better get this guy this information because we're going to put it out anyway. But see, what they did, Mr. Ed, was they were very slick about it. And the Star Tribune usually has the whole breakdown of each school
by
what
district,
their test, by district and what the scores were. Well, we have yet to get that. I asked for that this Thursday, and still have not received that. What they sent me was the summary. And I cannot find, for the life of me, anywhere where it lists the individual schools because, as we said on this show many times before, the schools in North Minneapolis with African-American names, Bethune, Lucy Laney, et cetera, are all failing horrendously. And so I want to see what the numbers were exactly for the students in those schools. excuse me. And, of course, we don't have that. And, Star and Tribune, of course, is complicit in that by not publishing that when they normally do.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me say this also again for our international and domestic audiences that's listening in. A year ago on this program, we indicated that this was about to happen when the commissioner of education here, Casillas, indicated that there would be a change in the procedural approach to monitoring and reviewing the testing protocol. And what happened was that testers showed up and started looking over the shoulders of many of the individuals involved in the classroom and the so-called testing and et cetera. And the word is clearly out within the State Department of Education here in the state of Minnesota that they were able to circumvent and block a lot of questionable practices. Preparation of testing, information being given to a student in advance, just unfortunately outright cheating and et cetera. That was curtailed by this cadre, really, of special testers that were sent in by the Department of Education. And unfortunately for us and particularly for our community, the African-American community, we are seeing the devastating effects. And when you talk in terms of 2010 and the referendum and et cetera, in some cases, it's a drop of over 40%. That's actually most educators who know education understand and tell you that, it's really hard to achieve that level of disaster. Notice what I said, to achieve that level of disaster. That's actually difficult. But that's what's happened. I don't know if the district is going to make a public statement to the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis, most importantly to the parents of the children. They need to. There needs to be transparency. We'll use all the little proper words that folks use in these kind of situations. There needs to be transparency. There needs to be a clear and concise explanation, if you will, and a solution for immediate corrective action should already, in fact, be in place because the district has known about these test scores ever since they submitted them to the State Department of Education and the Federal Department of Education in early June of this year. It's not like they just got surprised, too. And I just think that the average person would concur with the statement that I just made. There should have already been a press conference called, and the chairperson of the board and the superintendent of schools and her cabinet should have been standing behind her because they have complicity and culpability with respect to this disastrous failure of the children of color in the Minneapolis public schools. But, they're not going to do that.
No, And another thing, Mr. Edwards, they want to throw more money at it because, you know, they're trying to get another, well, I think they will have another referendum on the ballot in November for the Minneapolis Public Schools, District 1. And, you know, this throwing money at the Minneapolis Public Schools and we're not getting any results has to stop. And I agree with the statement that you made. Someone should resign, not only the superintendent, but the board of directors. They need to all step down and do something significant because there is a huge problem here when you have students graduating from high school in a poor neighborhood that cannot write a one-page, double-spaced paper about buttering toast.
Let's give that number, Don. You didn't give that number. Let's give that number. The phone lines are, we are about transparency and appropriate communication. Give that number.
That number is 347-426-3904. Again, our number here, phone lines are open, is 347-426-3904. We'd like you to call in and talk about the Minneapolis Public Schools or a topic that you're passionate about. The phone lines are open.
All right. Now, these latest test scores, I am surprised that we have not had an early indication that that the superintendent – or in this case, the Commissioner of Education for the state of Minnesota is not going to address that. In fact, I would call upon Commissioner Casillas to indicate her concerns and observations. I normally would say maybe she doesn't have any concerns, but she is a product of the Minneapolis public school system, grew up in public housing in southeast Minneapolis, knew her parents, if you will. I know that she has a passion. And so I will not say that she's not concerned. I just think that there is probably political pressure on Governor Mark Dayton, who is having his own problems, if you will. But have the commissioner be rather moderate, if you will, in her observations about this disaster. But I would still call upon the Commissioner of Education for the state of Minnesota to indicate her concern and, more importantly, her expectations for corrective action. I just think that's the way allegedly democratic institutions are supposed to be managed. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Yeah, I agree 100%, Mr. Edwards. And on Friday afternoon at 3:30, I sent a request for Commissioner Concilius to join us next week on our next program.
Very good.
If she can, because, and I explained in that email that this is not an attack. We're looking for explanation. And please make us understand why in the last, since 2008, that our African-American, Hispanic, and Asian and children have Native American children have seemed to slip off the face of the earth as it pertains to education. And how, you know, what corrective actions will they take? Can she be, would she be willing to discuss it? I'm also going to offer, we are going to offer that same request to the Superintendent Bernier Johnson and maybe even one of the board of directors of the Minneapolis Public Schools.
Let me say this to you, Mr. Allen, on that, which I mean, that's the way to do it. But I will not participate as a co-host in a discussion with Stan Allen, the mouthpiece for the district. I have no interest in seeing Don. Well, see, they pulled that a year and a half ago. We went in that same direction. We asked for the superintendent to come forward. She's being paid enough. It is under her stewardship and supervision. And Stan Allen stumbled around attempting to answer, and then the game he's played for the last year and a half as if he is understanding what has happened. I will not participate in any interview with Stan Allen. It has to be Superintendent Johnson, and it has to be the chair or ranking member of the Minneapolis Board of Education. That's the way the game goes. That's the way white blog radio and white talk radio would deal with it, and they would get in line, if you will. So that's the way we're going to be dealing with it here at Black Blog Radio.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I agree 100% with you about that. So, again, I'm going to give that number out one more time. I just got a text. Someone's asking for that number. That number is 347-426-3904. Again, the phone lines are wide open, and I know a lot of you RSVP today on the Facebook event who are tuned in and say you listen every Saturday. We'd like you to call in and discuss this atrocity with us and give your insight on what's happening within the Minneapolis Public Schools.
Don, and this comes at a time when we are in almost a state of emergency with respect to violence. I call attention to the article in this morning's edition of the Johannesburg Times, known sometimes as the Minneapolis Star Tribune, that talks in terms of a total warfare within the youth Somali community. The bodies are piling up left and right, retaliation, killings, and et cetera. That needs to be addressed. But at the same time, when you have a dysfunctional educational system, there's no way in the world that you can provide the necessary incentive, if you will, for people to look in another direction other than violence. And criminal activity is a part of a so-called justifiable economic base. I mean, it's absolutely out of control in this city. The violence, Mr. Allen, is just unbelievable. Shootings and bodies being found and people being gunned down. We will have a double funeral in this city, unprecedented for this city, a double funeral on Tuesday of two young African-Americans gunned down in an ambush in which, of course, there are no suspects. We have at least five other killings in which there are no suspects just in the last couple of weeks. And I attribute that, Mr. Allen, to, as I said before, a dysfunctional and collapsing and chaotic education system, unfortunately, under a black superintendent.
Yeah, that's the real unfortunate part right there. I mean, what do you do? Mm-hmm. These kids no longer this just in, Mr. Edwards. A Roosevelt High School, which is in Minneapolis Public School District, a Roosevelt High School student has been arrested for alleged rape at the Roosevelt High School. And this is very interesting because a gentleman by the name of Marcus Schuberg Jr., who has a daughter that goes to, and a son, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that goes to Roosevelt High School, he wrote a piece because he was complaining about dropping his children off at Roosevelt High School and how the ladies were walking out in the school hardly clothed and what was going on and how come the school wasn't kind of enforcing some kind of decency code, you know, rather than a dress code. And so now we have an incident where a young 17-year-old male has been arrested in connection with alleged rape at Roosevelt High School in Minneapolis. And so
I'm just not surprised, Mr. Allen. I'm aware, as in my role as a Department of Justice monitor, that a whole lot of things are happening that are being kept from the general public as it pertains to our educational institutions. So that's why I said I'm not interested in hearing Stan Allen attempt to provide the party line for the school district, if you will. In fact, it was about a year ago, wasn't it, Mr. Allen, that you approached the directors and asked a specific commitment to a specific procedure. And why don't you repeat that? Because the Steve Brandt and others would give you no play on that. I remember the discussion that I heard within the Star Tribune that they had been told to declare you persona non grata.
Non grata, yeah.
But why don't you just let our audience know what it was that you requested?
Yeah, on September 25th, 2012, I presented to the Minneapolis Public School Board of Directors and the Superintendent Johnson, and I made a rather simple request. I asked them to fix just one school in the Minneapolis public school system, and if they didn't, they should step down. And I informed them I'm not going to bug them or show up for a year. And now the test scores are out, Mr. Edwards, and we're almost to September 25th again. Well, they have 24 more days, and they're not going to fix anything in 25 days. So they have to resign. They have to turn in their resignation. Because there's not anything being done.
Turn in their book bags.
Turn in the book
backpacks.
The backpacks.
Yeah, right.
Some district laptops, just drop them off. Okay.
Yeah, those big iPhones and stuff that they get with taxpayers' dollars and that they set up there, Googling or whatever else they do. All those quote-unquote residuals that they get as public servants, turn all your stuff back and get your backpack, put all your stuff in the backpack and turn your – we'll do it like they do it in professional football. Turn your playbook in.
Yes, turn it in.
Yeah, turn your playbook in. Yeah, yeah. And, Mr. Allen, so we're absolutely transparency here and et cetera. You have never had a response from the district relevant to your request in September, late September of last year. Is that correct? Am I correct on that?
I've never had one response at all. So
I know that members of the Black Alliance leadership at that time under Gary Cunningham and others denounced behind closed doors the audacity of you to take that kind of position, make that kind of request that you were a bad fellow and that your associate, Mr. Edwards, were bad people and had not earned the right. That's interesting how our leaders talk, have not earned the right to even question the success or failure of public education or any facet of education here in our beloved Shangri-La.
And Mr. Edwards, I need you to hold that thought about Gary Cunningham and the African-American.
Sure, sure.
Because we have a caller. And
let's get the caller in. Let's see what they're talking about. Let's get them.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Mr. Edwards, Mr. Allen, how are you guys doing this afternoon?
Real good, sir. Fine. And yourself?
You?
All right.
I'm good, thanks. I'm going to sound like a broken record. Because I've said this for a long time. The one thing that's missing in the Minneapolis public schools, I know we have a black superintendent, is authenticity in the classrooms, okay, at the top of the helm. I attended Rams International Fine Arts when I went to junior high school back in 92. We had a black principal. And if you can go back, the Star Tribune did an article on it. We had some of the best test scores at a junior high school in the state of Minnesota. We had black teachers, we had Asian teachers, we had Native American teachers. There was so much authenticity in the classroom, it makes a difference. I don't think people can understand when you have a certain population, let's use blacks for example, when you have us coming from single family homes or drug induced mothers and fathers, when you go to school and that's their getaway for a while, you have to tap into that child, okay? You can't just put a piece of paper in front of the child and say, okay, today is math, and let's, at the end of the classroom, turn it in. That child needs mundane attention, and they have no room for doing it. And if the notion of mentioning that, they like to call you a racist and say you're playing the race card when you bring it. Well, we have teachers. Yeah, but we don't have ethnic teachers in the classroom. There are a lot of people, and you know what I'm talking about, they don't believe that it makes a difference when you're represented in that classroom. It makes a whole hell of a difference. They don't believe so, Ron.
You're absolutely correct, sir. You're absolutely correct that they really don't. And it's a part of their, I guess I would call it, subjective analysis and sense of the value, or in this case the lack of value of the African-American as a functional intellectual human being. And, you know, we're basically discouraged, not myself, but, you know, and I can't speak for anybody else, but we are basically discouraged from even beginning to go into that kind of discussion and probe the depths of the sophistication of that kind of racism. In fact, I saw it on the program on CNN last night, the white teacher from South High School, who actually was, you know, very articulate, very astute in the manner in which he attacked the value of black students and black people and et cetera. The only problem is, for those that know him at South High School, knows that he is extremely biased against his black students. He teaches allegedly
exactly.
History. He's very biased against his black students, but he is a clever Afrikaan, if you will. And so he's able to get away with that. He's able to do that, and there's no one, obviously, in the so-called educational arena that's prepared to stand and to refute, if you will. And there are a lot like him. And as far as they're concerned, we are just a step below a savage, you know. And so
yeah.
Why should our children expect, and why should we as Negroes expect that our children will be educated to compete, not just to get by, if you will, but to not only compete but to excel. And that's where we're losing it, because the system has decided. And if anyone wants to call and ask me about the system, I'll give you a 2-hour dissertation. Okay, don't make that mistake. The system has made its mind up that the lineage, if you will, of the African American, of the sons and daughters of Africa, has come to an end in America. Okay,
yes.
They maintain that we need to move on. They've created some new Negroes, quote unquote. We know who we're talking about. Do you understand what I'm saying?
That's
and
right.
They figure that we have exceeded our time to have the right not only to exist but to excel in this society and on this continent. And, man, we're scared to talk about it, gentlemen. We're scared to talk about it.
Yes,
we're scared to call them out.
Here's why I'm going I demand it. Number one, my wife and I are taxpayers, so I'm going to demand that my child's education is good because I pay for it, okay? I think we pay less attention to the public schools. I was telling Sue Jeffers the other day, Ron, you know who I'm talking about.
Yes, sir, yes, sir.
I was telling her the other day at State Fair that one of the problems our schools are here in Minneapolis, some of them are becoming dilapidated. It's inexcusable when you can excuse children from school because due to excessive heat. That's inexcusable. That child suffers, okay? That child should be in the classroom learning. I remember when Betty Jo Webb was superintendent. Boy, did she crack the whip.
Assistant superintendent.
Assistant, I'm sorry, that's right.
Yeah,
assistant superintendent.
Okay.
But she took the position of being superintendent because she was more outgoing. You know, she was the face of the 807 back then. But,
yes, sir.
But she cracked the whip. Now, we should have high expectations for our kids. I do. We certainly should. But I don't think we're looking for an excuse when we say that it does make a difference when my child isn't learning sometimes from a black man or a black woman what it's like to be black. They get it at home, but also you're in school for 8 hours a day. So is it my attitude or is it silly of me to demand that teacher teaches my child mundanely the necessary things? But if you have schools that are dilapidated and not being the money that you guys are talking about that are being thrown at the schools, they're not being thrown at the right schools. You know, if that child can't study because he or she is hot or something like that, you know, that's on the administration and not that child. It ultimately is going to wound the child because that child is missing out on some parts of his or her education.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
By the way, on the point of the quality of educational instruction by personnel, our international and domestic audience needs to know that 90% of the certified teachers corps in Mass public schools are white. 90%. Okay. And so it's pretty difficult for a black educator to really get a job in the Minneapolis school public school district. And we have a black superintendent. You know, obviously that black superintendent should have a influence, I would assume, over the personnel department and recruitment component. Because, you know, each and every year they go out to recruit, quote-unquote, the best and et cetera, and I keep seeing them bring in white, particularly primarily females, who come from rural Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, and et cetera, who all they want to do is get locked in, get tenured, and get out to some of the, quote-unquote, better schools. That's southeast and particularly southwest Minneapolis, way up in northeast, if you will. And people have kind of talked about that, but again, we're not committed. Our leadership, our community is not committed. I mean, at some point, there should be, with Mr. Allen and caller, I mean, with these numbers, these deplorable numbers, you know, 3,000 or 4,000, just like they marched for Trayvon Martin, God bless him, and there was, I have no problem with that, so 4,000 to 5,000 black people and parents should march on 1250 West Broadway and shut it down.
Well, Mr. Edwards, there's not a grant for that yet.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Oh, yeah, there's not a grant for Parks for Education. and you know what? I think we have, if he doesn't mind, I think we have Mr. Nelson on the line with us, who's an avid listener. And this is something I think we discussed a while back, or at least I did on my Facebook page. But, Mr. Edwards, this is for both of you. This is something that we really got to think about. Now, we know the African-American Leadership Forum, led by Gary Cunningham, Lissa Jones, who else is in it?
Smith Baker.
Smith Baker from
Chris Stewart,
United.
Jeffrey Hassan, whole group
Jeffrey
of people. Hassan. Right.
Now, for the last 2 years, they have an education component that they're focusing on education and working with the Minneapolis Public Schools to help these students out to raise the test scores. And the stuff they're doing is high level, G-19 classified, and people like Ron Edwards, Don Allen, and Mr. Nelson, and others, we can't involve you in this because you'll ask too many questions. And believe me, we'll have results. Right. Now there is no results. What are these Negroes doing besides having a social cabal? You know, all they're doing is like when they go and part, they have these big, what do you call them, galas and events. And
galas, yeah.
My name is John Doe. I'm part of the African American Leadership Forum. And you haven't done a damn thing for anybody.
Right.
You know, and that's right. All they, these different groups, the African American Leadership Coalition, which is a spinoff on the forum. They have these events, and they've been focusing on the East Africans in Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, et cetera, you know, with Isaiah.
Right.
Another group who says, we're doing all this stuff for education for these poor black children, and especially in North Minneapolis. And here's what's happening, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
You have an area like North Minneapolis. These people have gotten very wise that they can go to any foundation, granting government organization and say, hey, we got an area over here with about 60,000 people, about 37% black, but all the blacks have every disparity that you're giving a grant out for. We have diabetes. We have prostate cancer. We have education. We have crime. We have youth. And then once you look at it, you get people like Shiloh International Church on Broadway Avenue receiving a grant for gang involvement, youth outreach.
Gang intervention.
Intervention. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Edwards, we talked live here on this show to Pastor Howe. Bishop Howe,
right, 2 years ago, right.
And the best thing he could give us asking questions was that, well, some of them gave their life to God. I mean,
that sounds like the old Catholic Church 300 years ago. Did you say we had a caller on? No, Don, we don't want to keep him. Did you say Mr. Nelson is holding?
Yeah, no. We're talking with him right now.
See. You gave his name on. Okay, gotcha. Okay, gotcha. All right. Okay.
I hear him calling Sue Jeffers' show. Anyway,
what you guys are saying is absolutely right. We aren't putting enough onus on the so-called African-American leaders. These fools, may I say politely, are getting this money and running away with it. The teachers that are in these schools are, it seems like at 3:30 or 4 o'clock they stop caring for the child. Some of these kids need after-school tutors, after-school activities. It boggles my mind when some people can't understand how when you come from an impoverished neighborhood, how crime is so high, where crime is so high, how it's not so easy for you to educate yourself, okay, and how they don't pick up on these things. So we're going to pay you well as a teacher, but you're not smart enough to pick up what's wrong with child number eight. So we have to, number one, tell these black leaders to shut your mouth and put more action in it. I thought, too, like you guys, when we got a black superintendent that things were going to be done, but she ain't cracking the whip. It's time for her to go. She's a sweet lady. I knew her when my nephew was when she was assistant principal at my nephew's school. She's a sweet lady, but it's time for her to go. I don't care what color you are. If you ain't cracking the whip, and if the black kids around here, the Spanish kids and the Asian kids, test scores aren't passing the mustard, it's time for these particular teachers to go. If we're paying them well enough, and I think that we are, I mean, I'm no teacher, but I think that we are, we're paying them well enough to educate our children, and they're failing at it. They're educating these white kids better than they're doing the black kids because, number one, they have better schools. So it's time to get more money into the Minneapolis public schools the right way and get rid of these teachers that are not teaching our kids, period.
Excellent. All right, sir.
Okay.
Well,
appreciate
thank you, guys.
Any
questions, Mr. Allen, of our caller? Appreciate it,
brother. Thank you, guys, for calling, sir.
All right. Thank you.
And Mr. Edwards, and here goes another point about this whole education thing.
Say that
the children in the Minneapolis public schools, the African Americans, the Native Americans, and the Hispanics were passing. Okay, say they were in the 80-90 percentile, you know, as far as on these MCA2. You know, I'd much rather be defending Superintendent Johnson from the white infrastructure that would go after her because the kids are passing rather than asking her to resign because she's not doing the damn thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, the roles would be reversed in a way, you know, for lack of a better term, because say if our kids were passing in the Minneapolis public schools, I'm a product of Minneapolis Public Schools. Mr. Nelson just talked about ethnicity in the classroom. Well, at Bancroft, we had Mr. Boone, who was the basketball guy. He was the fifth grade teacher, the advisor. I mean, did everything. Went to Minneapolis Central. We have Mr. Robinson, Mr. Jackson. I mean, we had
the late Earl Bowman and others long before that.
Yeah, we had a host of African American male and female teachers, and Dr. Joyce Jackson, our principal, or Miss Tabor now, our principal, and who, you know, at 11th grade, my mom brought a leather belt to school and told Dr. Jackson that if I cut up, she's welcome to use that belt.
This is
11th grade, and so I mean, we don't even have those kind of people in our school. And if you don't have that ethnicity, as the young caller talked about, then we're on a path to failure anyway. Now, I have to look at the parents. A lot of people blame some of the failures in the Minneapolis public schools on the parents. Well, you have to look at it two ways. Yes, parents do have a responsibility. I have a responsibility to my sons, and parents have a responsibility to their kids as far as, you know, to helping them to read, watching what they're doing, and trying to, you know, teach them the right way. But in the poor areas of like North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, and where some of the schools are in Minneapolis public schools, these parents are fighting for survival every day. It's a decision between milk and gas to get to work. And sometimes it's a decision, you know, are we going to have lunch when we get to work, if they have a job? And so,
yep, absolutely.
And so, I mean, there's a lot of factors that you have to consider when you're looking at the overall picture. And I don't buy the point, like the African American Leadership Forum and the Leadership Coalition, when they turn this all into the parents' fault. And I sat through a couple of those meetings, Mr. Edwards, where I was truly disgusted and not able to speak. If I had a question, I had to write it down on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you cannot blame this thing. And, you know, and those people are friends of the DFL here in Minnesota. And, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, however you look at it, Superintendent Johnson is a friend of the DFL. And so they're not going to publicly criticize her. They will not call a press conference. But one thing, Mr. Edwards, that we have to look at and we have to watch carefully is this 13th grade that the Urban League is going to try to produce.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these test scores are going to directly affect them and have all eyes on them. And what will their results be? Now, the Minneapolis Urban League schools, when their high school and when they have their elementary school, have never turned in test scores to the MCA 2 and MCA 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've never been publicly charted. And so we don't even know what is their standing issues or their standing rate for the Minneapolis Urban League high school now. And number two, if they can even pull off a 13th grade. So that's yet to be seen. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors that we have to look at and keep people informed and watch very closely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. What else, Don, on this education piece? Go ahead. What else?
Okay.
Open that phone line. Let's see if we got any calls coming on education.
Let me see here. Well, we have a couple people texting saying that they're putting their kids down for a nap and can't get to the phone. And we appreciate that. We'll make sure they get the podcast. But our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And if any of the school board directors are listening that I sent invitations to for this show today, please call in and try to explain yourself. And Stan Allen, don't call. And
yeah,
so,
by the way, a lot of people are down at the Urban League Family Day. I hope they don't have a big shootout down there, but they've been, particularly as they move towards nightfall. But I imagine a lot of people are down there. They'll get the on-demand and analyze it and et cetera. But what else you got there, Don? You got a lot of statistics there and et cetera. What else do you want to deal with there? Go ahead on.
Well, I'm just looking at, you know, some of the test scores here, and let me pull this back up again here. This, particularly when you were talking about the state, one thing that they did not have, let me get to that page, was the 2013, and I will come across it here pretty shortly, the 2013 average for the state for these scores, and I'm scrolling down to that page right now as we speak, because it was curious. I was curious because the percentage of students who met or exceeded the standards on the 2013 MCA 2 and 3 reading by racial and ethnic category. Minneapolis
ethnicity?
Versus
yeah,
the state.
Okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And it says race, ethnic category here. I am looking at that, and the state 2013
should be 58, 56, 55 there, and as much as 80% for white students. In fact, it's down from 87 in 2012 down to 83 in 2013. Mm-hmm. That's what you should have there, right there at your
fingertips. I'm actually looking at one that has no entries, page 14 of.
Doesn't. That's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's what I was kind of concerned with. But yet you have the Caucasian students at 87% in 2012. A small drop to 83 in 83%,
right.
And then in 2012, you know, 56 for Native Americans, 53 for the African Americans, and 58 for the Asians. But still, no state 2013 MCA 2 and 3 combined there, which it should be there. And so that's we're gonna have to get those numbers from the district.
Well, those numbers are in play. Maybe on Monday, you may want to request from the state a redacted copy, if you will, or supplement, as they say, that has those numbers in there. In reviewing that yesterday, I found it rather peculiar, but I know that those numbers are, in fact, in place, which raises a serious question about how those that fare so poorly in Minneapolis public schools on a statewide basis, which means for African-Americans, they are in the suburban school district, so there's a different kind of philosophy and policy with respect to how you educate the African-American child or allow the African-American child to be educated in a predominantly white classroom. Kind of interesting, you know, really interesting. Soledad O'Brien said last night that the deplorable numbers at Bethune Elementary School. That's an elementary school here for our domestic and international listeners that is actually right behind the Mastery School that they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the worst scores of any grade school, K through, what is Bethune, K through 5, in the United States.
Yeah.
So how do you read that, Don? What's your reading on that
at
Bethune?
I'm looking at that school. I think that Bethune has a population of students that have not, their parents have not connected with the district. The district has, as quiet as kept, excuse me, has this thing called throwaway. And let me define that for you real quick. These are parents that and families that don't necessarily connect with the school district. An educator who's actually on administrative leave from the Minneapolis Public Schools inboxed me a couple days ago. She was highly upset behind the test scores, and she said, I'm just going to tell you, you know. And it's as quiet as kept. It's not written on paper anywhere, but it's a common thing. Theme throughout the Minneapolis public schools, especially in poor neighborhoods, these throwaway families, or parents as they call them, never engage the Minneapolis public schools. The Minneapolis public schools never engages them. And I think the Bethune, the failure in that school is because of the collective of those type of students as defined by individuals within the Minneapolis public schools, not by me personally,
mm-hmm.
as people that, you know, we don't really care about, but they're going to attend this school, and whatever they can do, they can do. And they're really not putting any effort into making a school from K to 5.
Mm-hmm.
These kids should leave there and go into the 6th grade reading at least in the 6th grade level. Now,
mm-hmm.
the children at Bethune are even the 5th graders, I think, around second grade, barely. In reading and in math, I don't think they can rub two coins together and make two. And so that's really not a nice thing to say, but that's the reality of the Minneapolis public schools. And Mr. Edwards, I've seen the end result of a graduate from Minneapolis public schools. And I've gotten telephone calls from black parents that have their kids in Wayzata, it looks like here, Hopkins, in Columbia Heights schools,
yeah,
and other
Cooper, places
schools.
Like that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But the data shows that African American students don't do any better at those public schools than they would in the inner city school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might send your kids to a school outside of the city of Minneapolis, but they still are still performing at that rate. I mean, there are a few select that excel and do good, get into college, but still there's not a big difference, not a big climb. And those numbers that in the suburban schools can be broken down and brought back and almost mirror these test scores we have here in 2013.
So, Don, you're saying that they're cooking the numbers as it pertains to that box that says statewide?
Yeah.
Are you saying they're cooking the books on that?
I'm saying that is not a factual. There's too much data. There's too much stuff out there. There's reports that I could pull up that will explain, you know, in detail that children that go to the suburban, especially black children from poor neighborhoods that go to these suburban schools really don't perform any
better.
Now,
what about the children that actually live in the district? Why is that Hopkins, Rosemont, places like that, Chanhassen,
okay,
Savage, Minnesota. I mean, is there a difference, if you will, with respect to these children that are being bused in as opposed to the children that their parents actually live in the Pacific District and are property owners and taxpayers? Are you saying
exactly,
that there is something else going on?
There's a huge difference, and I'll explain that. It's called your economic status. Those black families that live in Chanhassen, Orono, Minnetonka, Hopkins, Wayzata, that are
Lakeville, Bloomington, Richfield, places
exactly.
like that. Okay,
you know, their economic status might, or I'm going to say in this case, is different than a student that is being bussed out of an inner city from a poor neighborhood that might qualify for free lunch at those schools. You know, where has that African-American student who lives in one of those suburbs here in Minnesota that are not eligible for free lunch because of the income the family makes and because of the, you know, the economic status of the family, which is
now,
also
now,
the
Don,
income.
Now, Don, do we have any numbers and percentages there as you're at your computers from Duluth and Rochester? What numbers are you seeing up there?
I am actually, it's funny that you said that, because I was looking for the Duluth public school numbers, and I am actually typing in that information to see if something comes up here, and just give me 2 seconds here. Minnesota school test scores. I don't want to see the Star Tribune anymore. Let me just look here real quick and see what's going on here. Well, you know, Duluth has their public schools. They have some top-rated public schools, like Condon Park Elementary School, which gets a 9 rating out of 10. And they have
Marshall,
East Senior.
A good Marshall.
Yeah, East
Senior
High School.
They've always been their primary school. But you got any statistics there for Marshall? Let's just take Marshall in Duluth.
Yeah, I am looking. And Marshall's a high school, correct?
Yeah. Marshall's
okay,
a high school, yeah.
Okay, I have to navigate to that and get to that particular school here. Marshall, come on. You know, this is not showing me any numbers based on the Duluth Public School System, so I might have to go to the Minnesota Department of Education site.
Right. Let's swing down to Rochester. Let's go at Kip Brown's high school there, John Marshall, not to be confused with Marshall in Duluth. John Marshall in Rochester, because John Marshall and Mayo are always being identified as top-notch schools within the Minnesota matrix. You got any information there just at your fingertips? What do we got there?
I don't have anything at my fingertips, but I am actually looking for data here at the Minneapolis. I had to go to the Minnesota Department of Education, and anybody that's been to that site knows that navigating on that site is a nightmare. But what they do have here is the MCA proficiency trend percentage percent proficient by year, which is incorrect. They're educators. They need to fix that. Ethnicity statewide, and they have math. American Indian, Native American, or Alaska Native, 2.2%. Pacific Islander, Asian, 7%. They're showing black of not of Hispanic origin, 10.1%. And white, not of Hispanic origin, 73% in math. And I'm looking at this here, and I'm trying to find the individual all schools. Let me just put this down here. And what was the name of the school we're looking for in Rochester again?
The two of them, John Marshall and Mayo.
Okay, let me.
Same spelling as the Mayo Clinic. Yeah. two top high schools here in the state of Minnesota, and very much top high schools there in Rochester. Yeah, John Marshall and Mayo. Yeah.
Yeah, and I am looking for those. I would have to navigate the heck out of this thing to even.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll probably get to that. There is some information, Don, in both the Duluth Tribune, which is the top paper up there, and the Rochester Post Bulletin. Okay, you may want to search that because they've done some articles over the last couple of years about achievement gaps and testing and et cetera. In fact, Duluth had a black superintendent, so, you know. But anyways, that's something we'll certainly talk about. Let's get that number out there again. See if there are any calls out there, though I imagine most people are.
Yes, we have a caller.
Let's get the caller on. We don't want anybody holding. Let's get them on.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Hello, caller. You're live on the air. Yes.
You know, I just want to first say that I am so blessed to have two strong men, leadership, if you will, to bring forward a lot of information to our community. First of all, I want to say thank you. This is Queen.
Thank you, Queen.
Don, and thank you, Ron,
for putting up,
you know, the event because I rushed up out of one thing to come here to make sure I was in a place where I could call and say I support what y'all doing. Thank y'all. You know, it's men like you all that is giving us this information and giving us some straight information about education, and that's all I wanted to say is I appreciate y'all.
All right. Thank you, Queen, and God bless. All right. Thank you. Yeah, information, important. It's the element that sometimes helps you to survive, doesn't make you become extinct, if you will. Maybe folks need to really understand it. This education piece. Don, what else on this education piece? What's your thinking on the future strategies by the district? We talked about it earlier, but what's your thinking about future strategy? What would you suggest?
Well, the future strategy from, and I'll tell you what I think was going to come from the school district. They're going to want some more money. They're going to push this referendum.
They'll hire consultants and things like that.
Yes, and they're going to want some more money. But see, the problem is Superintendent Johnson, I don't think she's a bad person. I just think she's misled. She's spending hundreds of thousands of dollars hiring upper end administrators, and she's not putting anything into the classroom. Or I don't even think the teachers really have the academic freedom to do what they need to do in the classroom to help the children. I think that everything's being dictated by the district. Everything's being dictated to
micromanagement.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And so, with that said, when you micromanage in an education arena, you that brings up your costs go way up because your hands are in every cookie jar. And so, if they would take their hand, go ahead.
Let me ask you a question on that, Don. There is not currently a vacancy based on the sudden death of a school board member, Samatar. Now, what do you think the politics are, Don, with respect to who will replace Samatar? You think that the board politically feels obligated to select somebody from the Somali community? Or what's your thinking on that?
Well, I think the right thing to do would be to get someone from the Somali community. But then again, the board's in a position where they need supporters of Bernadier Johnson. And so that person could be anybody. And it turned into a political move. While Mr. Samatar did great work for the Somali community as a board of director for the Minneapolis Public Schools, and our condolences to his family, friends, and coworkers, that is not a priority to replace him. Although people like Fartoon Welly and other individuals in the Somali community are prepared to step forward to make sure that position is filled by someone in the Somali community, I'm going to say, Mr. Edwards, I'm just going to call it now and say no. There's not going to be another Somali individual put in that place. It's going to be someone so the board can continue status quo, and where we have a weak board and strong superintendent infrastructure that does not do anything to help the education of the students. And I'm really hurt and upset behind a wonderful person, Board of Director Kim Ellison, who I thought was going to get on the board and really crack some whips. But it seems, Mr. Edwards, that she has gotten timid and silent, and has not, you know, flexed the power that she could actually flex, you know, just with her last name, you know, with or without her.
Yeah. And so, her ex-husband being the federal congressman from the district. You would think that.
And then someone like Rebecca Gagnon. Director Gagnon, who taught in Singapore, Singapore has the number one schools in the world on the planet Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was.
And by the way, so people understand, Singapore is what is called a city state. It's just not the city. It is a city, what is called a city state. It is its own sovereign state. And so they control everything with respect to within the boundaries or the corporate boundaries of Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely correct. She should have taken away a lot there from her tenure in Singapore. You would like to think some of that being applied.
Exactly. Mr. Edwards, I even launched a little campaign on Facebook that said Rebecca Gagnon for superintendent. I felt this time last year, if she was the superintendent of the Minneapolis Public Schools, at least all children would have the opportunity to learn and get good test scores, because I think she would have thrown that, you know, or figured out a way to circumvent that MCA 2 crap and actually teach the kids. And we would see schools in North Minneapolis, black schools like North High and Henry, et cetera, with almost an 80% increase in 12th graders to college. Right now, I think it's like maybe 18 to 20%, if that. You know, and so, I mean, that's the main thing. People aren't, you know, the white infrastructure teaches their kids that, hey, you're going to go to school, you're going to read these books because you're going to go to college and you're going to learn, and then you're going to get a good job and you're going to be a useful member of society. You're going to have buy your car, family, house, et cetera, live your life, and pass on that same legacy to your kids. Where in our community, we look at our children, we say, well, I don't know if we're going to be able to eat tomorrow, and the lights might get cut off. And that we don't have a car, so we have to take public transportation. But you've got to get to school because we don't have any food, and you have to eat lunch. And you can get lunch Monday through Friday, guaranteed, and breakfast at school because we don't have a lot of money. And, you know, you qualify for that. And that's something that really affected a lot of parents this week when the schools were closed Thursday and Friday, Mr. Edwards. We heard complaints from local nonprofits that were getting calls off the hook. I was actually at a nonprofit on Friday that received several calls from parents asking, were they feeding children who weren't in school today? Because they said, we didn't have any food at home. And this nonprofit actually, you know, made sure that these people got gift certificates to Aldi's to go get some milk, bread, whatever they needed. I mean, $50 to $100, depending on the family size. And I mean, it really, they went through with some expenses on Friday, making sure some families in North Minneapolis got some food for their kids who would not be in the school system and having their breakfast and lunch. So I'm glad those people were there. But, you know, we have to look at it at a 360 point of view. Superintendent Johnson has not done what she's needed to do. The education of minority children, and I'm just going to say the education of all children in the Minneapolis public schools has become politicized. And it has become politicized through the DFL political plantation, where we will not discuss openly, we will not criticize openly, nor will we condemn or reject openly another member of the Democratic Party or the DFL here in Minnesota, being Bernadier Johnson. This would never happen in Chicago, Washington, D.C., New York, California, Denver, or Seattle. You know, when you have these children not performing like they need to perform, although in those cities you do have some of the same problems, but in Minnesota, the Mississippi of the South, we have the farthest actions going on where you have these black children in these schools that are failing, that are not going to college. That I interviewed three children with their mother's permission, and I'm going to put it is up on YouTube now, Mr. Edwards, but one of them was 8. One of them was 9, and one of them was 10. And I asked them the first question. I said, and they all go to Minneapolis Public Schools over north. Okay? And I asked them the first question. I said, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? The 9-year-old said a basketball player. The 8-year-old said a football player. And the 7-year-old said a rapper. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The next question I asked, I says, well, wouldn't you like to be a dentist, a doctor, a researcher, or a scientist, or maybe you'd like to build a building, or
yeah, maybe an astronaut. Yeah, get us out of this solar system.
The 9-year-old says, "Well, I'm not that smart."
Is that right? Dial said that to you?
Yeah, the 9-year-old.
How'd the mother respond? Was the mother present when you were doing this?
The mother was.
How'd the mother respond when the child said that?
The mother tracked me down because of what was coming out of the 9-year-old's mouth as it pertains to school. She said at some, the mother wouldn't get on camera, but she says, you know, these teachers are telling my kids that they're dumb, that they're not smart, that they might as well go, you know, try to get a job cooking somewhere. I mean, of course, in the United States, you're going to have your fry cooks and your people that work in different capacities here, because you're just going to have that. But for these kids just to flat out give up at 9 years old, this is ridiculous, Mr. Edwards, and this creates a serious problem. And people ask us, you know, me and you, you know, why aren't we nice with the African American Leadership Forum or the coalitions and all these groups that have these great meetings and spend last year, the African American Leadership Forum hired consultants. These consultants don't charge no $200-$300. These are $5,000, $10,000.
Let me ask you this question, Don, because a lot of what you've been talking about here, I mean, that a lot of the ability to make the district more familiar with what the thinking of the black community is, I assume, even though the superintendent's black, and you have a couple blacks on the board. But one of the things that educators indicate is that they utilize these contracts with consultants and et cetera. Now, what do you think will happen if Bernadette Johnson begins to say that much of her strategy has been predicated on these private contracts that she's been consummating with a whole group of people? Do you think that community leadership is going to be able to defend themselves on that?
No.
These contracts that she's been giving out, the district's been giving out for a couple of years.
Oh,
do you think that they? I mean, that could be a deal breaker if the superintendent decides to say, well, you know, much of the strategy and et cetera that I have developed and approaches that I've used were provided to me and facilitated to me by African-American leaders who we brought in as consultants, paid them nice fees and et cetera. Yeah, how do you think that's going to play out?
That's not going to play out well for Superintendent Johnson once that gets to the mainstream here in the Twin Cities, especially the white infrastructure, because, I mean, I can just bring up something right now, which I go ahead. We can do this. It's our show.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm very upset at the fact of this CSI, this Community Standards Initiative, where you have a church, a faith-based organization. Now, listen to what I say. It's not an education organization. It's a faith-based organization in North Minneapolis that receives some kind of dollarage. They won't give us the exact amount. We have an idea and our estimate, but they haven't done one report. There's been no report submitted to the district per the district. The district has told me this, Mr. Edwards, that we don't have any reports from the community.
Yeah, I think you reported that about 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, about five weeks ago you reported it.
Okay, all right.
I'm saying, and I didn't say no names, but I'm saying, how do you hand out money to a faith-based organization that has nothing really to do with education other than the pastor of the church is the chairman of MSCU, Minnesota State University and Colleges and University or whatever it is. And I'm like, what's really going on? I mean, are we paying people to not help us? And who represents us in education? It's certainly, after these test scores, Mr. Edwards, it's not the African American Leadership Forum. It's not the Minneapolis Foundation. It's not Achieve Minneapolis. So at this point, those contracts that Superintendent Johnson is giving out are null and void because nothing has changed. You know, that's like being a lazy reporter, like the Johannesburg Times. We have a lazy superintendent, a lazy board of directors in the Minneapolis Public Schools who are not doing due diligence in getting out in the community and understanding what's going on. You know, the late Richard Green, superintendent of the Minneapolis Public Schools when I was in high school. You know, you could be walking down the hall and see him in Minneapolis Central when I went there, or Bryant or Ramsey or Bancroft, at least a couple times a week. And not just that school. He was making his rounds and with meeting with parents, going to parents' houses.
Well, of course, Richard Green was raised in Minneapolis and was a graduate of the Minneapolis Public School System, and his life was certainly entwined with Minneapolis and his familiarity with Minneapolis. In fact, I don't know that we've had many superintendents here in the last 30 years other than Dr. Green, the deceased Dr. Green, who were actually born and raised in Minneapolis or were attendees of the Minneapolis Public Schools. Maybe that sometimes has something to do with it, but, you know, in many respects it shouldn't. I mean, people allegedly bring a mindset and brilliance, if you will, that should not have anything to do with where you were born, raised, went to school, and et cetera. But Green, Richard Green, is one of the great success stories as a superintendent. And, of course, he met all of those qualifications, born, raised, grew up. In fact, grew up, as did our commissioner of education, grew up in public housing. Richard grew up in public housing and was a legend before he even became, quote-unquote, a college graduate with a degree in education, et cetera. But what's your thinking? Back to what you've been talking about. I mean, you got a crisis here, and how do you think that the district is going to, as well as Bernadier's supporters, are going to head off any impeachment, if you will, of what has or has not happened? I mean, what do you think their strategy is going to be?
Well, Mr. Edwards, you've seen this longer than I have here in the Twin Cities, but you know, we're talking based off facts. Based off qualitative and quantitative information that was put out by the Minnesota Department of Education and the Minneapolis Public Schools. Now, at some point in some circles, a discreditation is going to try to happen between, you know, those people and people like us who are asking these questions and repeating these scores publicly and posting them publicly, that we could be lying, we are not telling the truth, it is that's not the facts. And some people will believe that. Some people will not look for themselves and see this stuff. And so the what's going to happen, I think, in the long run is that, first of all, I think they're baking a cake for Superintendent Johnson. I think, you know, you have a Chief Minneapolis who is part of the city of Minneapolis. And, you know, R.T. Rybek for a long time has kind of hinted to the point, I mean, he's a lame duck mayor, but he still has hinted to the point of that, hey, I think the city of Minneapolis should take over the Minneapolis Public Schools, appoint the board of directors and the superintendent and have that oversight, you know, and then take the voting process for the board of directors.
Are you saying that's their ideas or that's your idea or
that's your joint idea? That was the idea of the R.T. Rybek and Achieve Minneapolis. See, they always thought that Achieve Minneapolis would supersede the Minneapolis Public School Board of Directors and go in that direction. And, you know, I had lunch in 2011 with Director Gagnon at Monte Carlo, who had talked in depth about that to me, and I was very concerned about that. Well, how would that work? And it would be very easy for the city of Minneapolis. It would be like a federal agency holding a local state or city agency or municipal agency in receivership. They would walk in and say, hey, you know, these test scores for the last 4 years are terrible. We're going to consult with the Minnesota Department of Education and the United States Department of Education, and we need to do something about this to save our children, save our youth in this city. So we are going to commandeer. And, of course, there's approvals that have to happen. There's some court orders that have to go down. But you know, that's what the idea was in 2011. That's what we know. Let's Achieve Minneapolis was created during the Rybek tenure to, and they're spending a lot of money, Mr. Edwards, in Achievement. They have a staff. I mean, they're printing up the shiniest, glossiest paperwork and presentations I've ever seen. And when Achieve Minneapolis did not supersede and do what they needed to do, they became a partner with the Minneapolis Public Schools. And so this partner with the Minneapolis Public Schools, it's like, you know, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. So they're right there with Bernadier Johnson, Superintendent Johnson, and the board of directors. They're a part of they understand the teachers union inside and out.
Let me ask you a question on that, on the teachers union. You haven't talked about that at all. Where do you think the teachers union is with respect to some of the observations that even we have been making here today on this program? where do you think the teachers' union is at, particularly on the issue of diversity, recruitment, and et cetera? Lynn Norgrim has certainly been moving around, though I noticed she was shredded from the piece last night on CNN, and I know there's some political fallout about that, the interview that was done with her was shelved, if you will, which raises a serious question about
the
union's point of view.
I don't think she is, and, you know, there was something that came out, and I should have paid a little bit more attention to it, Mr. Edwards, but I don't think she is the that person in charge of the teachers' union anymore.
Oh,
and
okay.
I think I am trying to search here in the studio looking for that. But I think that someone had replaced her because there was a press release put out that, let me just see here, that I don't see right now, but I don't think she is that person. So they would not, it wouldn't have been really.
You
smart.
Think maybe that was the reason that they did not, they did not show her last night on CNN because she had been deposed?
That was the reason.
Okay,
I am absolutely sure that that was
right.
The
Do
reason.
We have the name, though? Because our community needs to know, our listeners need to know, who is the current president of the Teachers Federation?
I am looking at that right now to try to find. I'm actually on their site. They do have a picture on her on the front of the.
Now, this is a Lynn or the new person?
There's a picture of Lynn here on the front, but I am trying to look. I'm trying to see who the new person is.
I would assume they're Caucasian.
Oh, of course. You know, we don't even have to.
Okay. Well,
that.
But you know, we're talking about a black mayor in the case of Don Samuels. We have had a black mayor here in our lifetime as a city. The Honorable Sharon Sells Belton. I mean, but you know, it's a possibility. But I wasn't being facetious. But what does it say? Because the website should have that information in play.
I'm on the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers and ESPs, Union of Professionals.
Maybe we can get a call from somebody that's aware of that, if they would just give us a call and tell us who the new president of the Teachers Federation is. I'd be interested to know, because that would indicate some political eruption and upheaval within the Teachers Federation that they must have been keeping quiet, because I was always left with the impression that Lynn Norgrim was quote unquote doing best job for her constituents, if you will. Now, if she's been ousted, then or chose not to run for another term, I mean, that's newsworthy. That is absolutely newsworthy.
And Mr. Edwards, on this site here, I am looking. I can't get into the teachers chapter, which would have the president, VP, second VP, recording secretary, treasurer, and executive board. But the executive board does show up here. I don't know if you know any of these names. Jim Barnhill, South, it says. Matthew Collier, Hall Elementary. Carla Norv, Northeast. Tim Leach, Wyndham. Ann Lurowitz, a Native
Those
American
Those are all
school.
White folks, by the way.
Yeah, Rebecca Miller, ECFE, Robert Panning Miller, South High School, Mary Ruffers, Hiawatha, and Frank Supa.
Well, go back to the South High School. What was that name again? Was that hyphen, Don, that you just read? Panning Miller, you said?
Yeah, Panning Miller. Panning hyphen Miller.
Well, Don, that's the gentleman that we talked about earlier on the program that is so anti-black that was interviewed 4 times. Now, maybe Soledad O'Brien had found out that Mr. Pattermiller had succeeded or ousted Lynn Norgrim. Yeah, I thought you would recognize that name. Yeah, he's the gentleman that was on at least 4 times last night, really being critical of Mr. Eric Mahmoud and being very, very negative about the ability of black children. And you show him as a member of the exec committee of the Federation?
Executive board, yes. Well,
I
caught the last 35 minutes of that Black in America.
Oh, he was
white
on
America.
After you turned it on, Don. He was on twice in the last 35 minutes. So
and so
he was there.
I was just kind of taken about when they introduced Saunders Samuels each time as a community activist rather than the leader of the North Side Achievement Zone.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what that was about, but that was very interesting that, you know, they wanted to position her as a community. She's far from it. So that's kind of sickening to to say the least. But, yeah, that's their executive board. I'm not pulling up, and I am still looking here. I know you're clicking in the background here in the studio, but I am feverishly looking for that. And, again, our number is 347-426-3904. We have about 10 minutes left of the show. If you have any information, please call in, and the phone lines have remained open during the show. Again, 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, I don't want to really change it up too bad, but, you know, we need to talk real quick about this March on Washington. Because, you know, Malcolm X said, you know, in 50 years, you'll be still marching, you know, and he was absolutely right. And what a lot of people don't know, there were some interesting things. You know, Dr. King wasn't the favorite person to march. He was a radical. He would be considered a Heckle and Jekyll.
And too young, by the way, Don. Also, he was considered too young. Yeah. He and John Lewis. But go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people don't remember the first march on Washington, the Washington movement of 1940, led by A. Philip Randolph, who's president of the Brotherhood.
1941, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. President of the Sleeping Car Porters, president of the Negro American Council, and vice president of the AFL-CIO. You know, he marched, and we don't have a lot of information going out, and people don't realize that there were some very important historical references going on, you know, with this march and connotations that people just kind of overlooked. And so I was not.
What's your thinking on that? I mean, you raised that. What's your thinking on the march? Because there's, you know, been a lot of play given to the march, a lot of references, a lot of people have been positioned to talk in terms that we have come a long ways in 50 years, and a lot of people who say contrary to that really have not been given a lot of space. But what was the genesis for you moving into that? I mean, what's your thinking? Something caught your attention or what?
Well, no, I just think it was just an overall thought. You know, we're still marching. Black people are still struggling to get their I guess.
Well, here's the thing. Let me say this that I noticed that folks are staying away from, and in the time we've got left, mm-hmm. I find it absolutely irreprehensible that no one has had the courage to say there is a certain tragedy. It's almost within the fatalism of Othello, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a black Moor, by the way, for those that don't know your Shakespeare. But I find it interesting that no one has made the comparison that we didn't have a Voting Rights Act in 1963, and 50 years later, on the occasion of the celebration, we don't have a Voting Rights Act in 2013.
Oops.
Probably not. I mean, I would have thought that would have been a common reflection by those who are certainly more intellectually superior than anything than an old a veteran of the civil rights movement such as myself. But I waited for a number of weeks in the preparation for the March on Washington and all the nostalgia that goes with it, and the fact that my good friend John Lewis is the only voice that is still alive based on the great men that stood on that podium. But the key is that 50 years later, you once again do not have a voting rights bill. You don't have voting rights protection. And the reason I say this, Mr. Allen, I thought maybe that's where you were going on this, is that this is an exact repeat of that period of time in 1876 when the Supreme Court, same kind of Supreme Court, obviously not the same white men there, including Clarence Thomas, but repealed and stripped the Negro of their franchise by repealing the Civil Rights Acts and the Freeman Acts of 1865, 66, 67, and certainly the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863. And I find it amazing that I've seen no one even touch that, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I'm surprised we even haven't gotten a call here. But for the purpose of historical fact, we are in the same position 50 years later as it pertains to our right to vote. And, man, that is the most fundamental platform and steps to the platform that one could be involved in. that we don't have any voting rights. And I know people are being told to stay away from it, but
yes.
a lot of you folks are going to find yourself denied access to the voting booths, even here in Minnesota in the elections of 2014. Not so much this time, because the strategy has been not to sound an early alert, because the conservatives are looking to take back the United States Senate, and the Republicans are looking to take back control of state government here in Minnesota. But I find it fascinating, Mr. Allen, and I think you also would, is that we have less in the area of voter rights in 2013 than we did when over half a million, by the way, they keep coming up with that 250,000. Man, there was a whole lot more than 250,000 people out there. There have been photographs, air photographs. They didn't have any satellites back in those days, but there have been photographs and et cetera that scientifically clearly indicate that the crowd was in excess by double, 250,000. There were half a million human beings there. But no one has said that. What's your thinking on the last couple of minutes? I mean, why do you think folks are staying away from that?
it's the training, it's the conditioning. You know, you had all them people, supposedly activists out, stomping the ground for the vote no piece, last year, Mr. Edwards, and, on the voter ID and all this, and they had no idea that they were get sideswiped by the taking away of your voter rights or voter suppression. And so, all these people are embarrassed, number one, because you see some people in our black community, some great people, I like these people, some of them, were out on the street talking about, these Republicans, they're trying to take this and this and vote no on the voter ID. I said, well, you're going to have some voter ID. Even if this fails, if vote no wins, I said, they're going to figure out a way to make you suppress your vote. Trust me. And sure enough, we come into 2013, and you're back at the same point you were before November 2012. And you don't want to talk about it because it's utterly embarrassing, because you were actually championing failing mission. You were actually helping the VLT community to get their vote no passed. By surreptitiously, out there.
And
in the
by the way, the VLT community, I notice, has not said a mumbling word about the African American and race communities being stripped of their voting rights. I notice there's been no quote unquote outcry. I find that rather interesting. As much energy as black people were encouraged to support their propositions.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I repeat what I just said for our international and national audience. It is ironic. It is tragic in that 50-year period that we're at the same exact spot as it pertains to voter protection, voter rights, and et cetera, as we were in August of 1963. We're in the same exact situation in August of 2013. And the Supreme Court swooped in. They just denutted, I have to use that word, they just denutted the African Americans and others of color, put them in a jar, set it up on top of the dais, if you will, of the nine members of the Supreme Court, and said, now take that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sad situation. We will begin to see the serious fallout of this in the 2014 election. Maybe that's the reason that the country, in closing on my part here, that the country is once again preparing for war, another war in which the people who will be the victims are people of color. By the way, let me just say this for historical purposes. About 5 years ago, when the Russians, our white Russian cousins, were brutally suppressing the Chechens, the Russians used chemical warfare and chemical weapons. That's a fact. That's contained within the files of the United Nations and the American intelligence community and other places. The Russians used chemical warfare to suppress the Chechens. And not a mumbling word was said. Everything was suppressed because you think that the United States is going to send cruise missiles into Russia. I don't think so. If they do, you and I won't be here this time next week.
If
that would have happened, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, then, man. Looks like we're ready to wrap it up, then. Don, go ahead.
Well, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to the Ron and Don Show today on Saturday, the last day of August 2013. Tune in next week for our show coming up. And we hope that you call in. Anything else, Ms. Edwards, before we just sign
out?
That's
it, baby. That's it. That's right. Take it home. Take it home, James Brown. All right.
Broken glass everywhere. People pissing on the stage. You know they just don't care. I can't take the smell. Can't take the noise. Got no money to move out. I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room.